As America grapples with changing administrations and broad rejection of Obama's highly liberal and unfettered immigration policy, Las Cruces clings to the past like a barnacle to the hull of the Titanic. The members of the Las Cruces Public Schools Board of Education voted on Tuesday to protect immigrants facing deportation under a Donald Trump presidency. Quixotic is a term meaning foolishly impractical, especially in the pursuit of ideals, especially marked by rash, lofty, romantic ideas, or extravagantly chivalrous action. This is Las Cruces in Doña Ana County in a nutshell, a place where unrealistic, self-aggrandizing, and ultimately self-defeating ideas come to live and die. Meanwhile, the Mesilla Valley suffers under the pitiless direction of progressives and their failed far-left policies. It is a shame that with such a wonderful locale, favorable climate, propitious timing, and an embarrassment of riches of opportunities, that this area must be blighted by leadership that lacks historical knowledge, common sense, or insights into the rule of law and economics. Will we be punished for our foolish, obdurate resistance? Friends, let us pray for relief. Kelly here. Good morning. 6:08 on the button. And yes, you heard it. If you haven't heard it yet, Las Cruces School Board wants to create a countywide sanctuary for immigrants. And this is reported in NM Politics. And it is we are seeking here to create a sanctuary status for residents and students. And so it has already been put out there by the president that places that resist the government are in danger of losing funding. Now we already spent, seems like half a show talking about the amount of government funding that this state gets. And as you recall, like I was able to find different documents with this information in it. We get billions of dollars out of the government, out of the federal government. And so then the question is, Santa Fe, Doña Ana County, the school district, however it plays out here, are we going to turn our back on the federal funds that are out there that we're so entrenched into? And the answer to that is because, for the same reason, the same type of short-sighted, quixotic leadership that we've had for a number of years, we don't have a robust economy to fall back on. We are the most dependent state upon federal dollars. You know, we're last in the things that you want to be first in, and we're first in the things you want to be last in. It is admirable that this city wants to help, and the school board, the county, and all of the lefty pseudo intellectuals want to help the poor and downtrodden and the illegal people. But yeah, I mean, seriously, it is admirable to want to help people. But are you going to do that against the laws of the United States? Are you going to do that against directives from the federal government, 523-1450? Are you going to do it at the risk of the loss of millions or even more in funds from the federal government, when you're basically, you know, this whole state is like on life support, isn't it? We're in ICU, and what is feeding us every day? We're hooked up to all these machines and tubes and everything, and it's federal dollars that are dripping into our veins every day. We're going to get up and defy the government. Have you ever seen this is going back a while, but there used to be a t-shirt around that said something. It was like, you know, a teenager would get defiance on the top of it, and underneath it is an eagle the shadow of an eagle over a mouse who's holding his middle finger up. So, the school board praises outgoing President Barack Obama's deferred action for childhood arrivals, DACA executive order, allowing some immigrants without legal status to come to the United States as children to remain in the country and work here. Quote, DACA will enable our qualifying students to attend college, work, and pursue a career and thus encourage them to do well in school and to graduate. This is this resolution that they put together. The resolution also praises Obama's other immigration-related executive order, deferred action for parents of Americans. I'm just reading from this article by Heath Hausman. DAPA, which would allow some immigrants without legal status who have children living in the United States legally to remain in the county or country and work here. So, I mean, here's the question. We want to do well. We want to support the poor and the needy and the downtrodden. And there's a real dilemma because we understand that people come here and they become a part of the community and we become attached to them, right? I mean, we get to know them. We don't know everybody who's got legal status or who doesn't, but we understand that they are in our midst and they're part of our community in some arguable sense, in some strong sense. But if they don't have legal status, and this is the problem with leftism, and you see it right now. The problem with leftism is it is essentially lawless. The left uses the law to get what they want, right? Gay marriage. They advocated for a long time for gay marriage. I use gay marriage in examples because I think it's kind of the zenith of what the left has achieved, not trying to pick on anybody, but gay marriage, take it to the nth degree, and so you use the law to establish what you say is right. But if you can't use the law to do that, then you claim the law itself is illegitimate. The powers that be are false. And what's going on right now with Obama is Trump is one attempt after another to delegitimize him. And the left has got this giant bag of tricks that it uses. And then unfortunately, the tricks are not full of clever ways to build up a business and to establish an economy and get all people working that are possible, spread the burden out, make life better for people, increase the standard of living and also the quality of life. The more people at work, the better quality of life that you have, because productive people are always going to be better off financially, but also emotionally and intellectually and psychologically. Studies have shown that people who don't work for extended periods of times go to seed, you know? So instead of using what they believe about themselves, their genius, I mean, if you're so smart, why can't you put together, I mean, if you've mastered reality to such a profound degree, why can't you use your intellect and your training, your education to build an economy that involves all people and has the elements that you want in it, social justice or whatever? I mean, why do you have to go and attack the economy and the law? You attack the government, you delegitimize the government. So if we stand up to the federal government, what's going to be the cost? And how is it going to benefit the community? How are we building up this community? How are we leaving a better community for our children and their children? I'm going to read Quixotic, the definition of Quixotic again, and it comes from Don Quixote, this guy that goes and, you know, the famous, he's going to go fight a windmill. Quixotic is a term meaning foolishly impractical, especially in the pursuit of ideals, especially marked by rash, lofty, romantic ideas, or extravagantly chivalrous action. So we're going to get caught up in this symbolic fight in which we are ultimately going to lose if the government goes after us in terms of the law. And we're going to act like we're the French resistance during the World War II. We're going to go to war with the government, and the government's going to end up cutting off our funding. And what direction is that going to lead? So, Mayor Ken opposes the sanctuary status. So, I mean, right there, you know, Mayor Ken is a person on the left. Right? I mean, if you know, at some point, no matter how far to the left you are, you have to try to be practical if you want to be successful. The city of Las Cruces is not a sanctuary city, nor do I support becoming one. Miyagashima was quoted as saying in the Sun News, and this again is from an article from NM Politics. And he says, the Las Cruces Police Department does not enforce federal regulation or immigration laws. If a person is pulled over, they will not be asked for their citizenship. So some of this stuff could change, right? And, you know, there in theory, they could come along and change whether the authorities, how people's status is established. But do we want to, in this city, number one, break the law? And number two, I mean, in defiance, it's these cities in the United States that are doing this act like they're sovereign nations, right? I mean, you know, not even the Indian nation, not even the American natives can establish a law they're separate sovereign nations, but they're under the Constitution, and they can't establish, you know, a regime in the United States that contradicts the Constitution, and neither can we. Anyway, we'll take a break here, and I'll come back and I'll read this resolution for you. But once again, why aren't we looking forward to going out there why not take on the world? You know, why not build this valley into some place that people want to come to? Not just a retirement village, but a place where people can come and open a business and know that the city's going to help them, that the city doesn't resist, that the people in the valley don't act like, or at least the leaders don't act like they're too good to help business people get established. Why not create an oasis for people to move to, because it's beautiful and we have a great agricultural setup here, and nobody has more spectacular mountains than we do, and we're close to the border, close to a major city, and got a nice university here. We've got so many things going for us, and yet we're just stagnant. We're like that the little kids that don't thrive. We're like one of those. I just don't get it. 523-1450 on AM Las Cruces. Kelly O'Connell, call in and give me your opinion. I see that Keith Welpley had made comments below this article. So anyway, we'll be right back. Willie Nelson. Oh, and the piano player on this is Willie Nelson's sister, Bobby Nelson. And Willie Nelson, his mother and father both walked out on the family. Think about that, when he was growing up in Texas. And so he and his sister were raised by their grandparents. And how did they get into music? Well, they went to a little church, and I think the sister, Bobby Nelson, sent away for mail order a piano book, and that's how she became trained. So she was I think she's retired now, but a very good country and Western piano player, honky tonk. And then Willie Nelson is a legend. We'll be back 15th, halfway through December, folks. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450.
Maybe I love you. Quite as often as I could have.
All right, so we've got this resolution. Let me just ask you, how do you feel when you hear things like this? It's not Santa Fe, which everybody realizes is farther to the left and very progressive. It is Doñana. I mean, I understand that there are probably 2-to-1 number of liberals to conservatives in this town, but on the other hand, I find the people here to be fairly, down to earth. The people that I run into, that are liberal, that my friends, are not radicals. They are people that see things from the left side, but they're into compromise. They are reasonable. They don't, with a few exceptions, of course. I told you about my friend who said, if you voted for Donald Trump, we're not friends anymore. But you've got a lot of people in this town that I think are, if they were living in another city, they would probably be Republican. You know, it's just that kind of a family tradition, to quote the song. And so it is mystifying to me that the leadership from this valley is so insistent on pushing things to the left, it is ultimately damaging and harmful to the community for the land laws to be changed in such a way that it makes it takes away value from the property, you know? And so what you've always got, and in this case, you've got individuals like Wayne Hancock and Billy Garrett who are living out their personal vision, you know, and that's what we had talked about many times on the show. I need to write a book on some along these lines of the liberal messiah, you know, the person who's going to come along and totally defy the tradition of America, not represent the will of the people, do their own vision. And what always happens when people do things like that? It's a disaster. It blows up. It's harmful. I mean, there's so many examples of it. The war on poverty created more poverty. The war on drugs created more drugs, you know. But war on poverty is a good example because these elite people that put this thing together, and it just created the opposite effect. Now, here is Las Cruces Public Schools, December 16, 2016, a memorial requesting the city of Las Cruces and county of Doñana to declare sanctuary status for the city of Las Cruces and county of Doñana. Whereas in 2012, President Obama issued an executive order providing deportation relief to certain undocumented immigrants who entered the U.S. before their 16th birthday. DACA, Deferred Action for Children Arrivals. And whereas in 2014, President Obama issued an executive order providing deportation relief to certain undocumented immigrants who are parents of U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents. DAPA, Deferred Action for Parental Accountability. And whereas many city and county students and parents potentially qualify for deportation relief under these orders, and whereas DACA will enable our qualifying students to attend college, work, and pursue a career, and thus encourage them to do well in school and to graduate. And whereas DAPA will enable our qualifying parents to obtain better employment and provide more economic security and stability for their children, and thus more support for their education, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They support that. Now, I've got a little clip here. DACA is... DAPA and DACA were put on hold by the Supreme Court. So check this out. This is from Rio Grande Valley, CBS4 News, June 24th. So this is old news.
The Supreme Court has now handed the Obama administration a major defeat on immigration. The court split the vote 4-4 evenly between the court's conservative and liberal.
That decision leaves a lower court ruling in place blocking the president's plan to spare up to 4 million undocumented immigrants from deportation and giving them work permits. And here to talk more about the court's decision is immigration attorney Rick Ramirez. First of all, welcome, Rick.
Thank you.
Tell us, for people that don't know, what is the difference between DAPA and DACA, and what are they?
Okay. Well, DACA was a program that was announced in 2012 to help the Dreamers, which were students or young people in the country that came here undocumented, a chance to have some kind of work permit and kind of a reprieve from deportation. And that program was announced in 2012. It's important to note that program was not affected by yesterday's ruling. Now, DAPA, which is Deferred Action for Parents, is a program that was designed to help the parents of U.S. citizen children or resident children obtain a work permit and again, shield them from deportation. And that was the program that was struck down yesterday, along with an expansion of the 2012 program.
Well, with the Supreme Court deadlock, as we said, where does that leave people who qualify for the two immigration programs?
Right. Well, if someone qualified for deferred action back in 2012, they can still continue with that program. It's not affected. They can continue to renew their permits and whatever benefits it had from that program. Now, the potential beneficiaries of the DAPA program, which was struck down yesterday, there's still no recourse for them. President Obama mentioned yesterday, you know, there's a law enforcement priority on these people. So even though they don't have a chance to apply for immigration benefits, the chance of them getting deported from the country is very, very minimal.
Yeah, because that's unfair for many people.
Yeah, now after the Supreme Court released its opinion yesterday, President Obama said people who would have qualified for DAPA and expanded DACA would remain a low priority for enforcement.
That's correct. And so, again, the DAPA guidelines, when they came out in 2014, stated that a person would be eligible for the program if there was no criminal history and they had been here for a while. And, of course, they were the parent of a U.S. citizen or resident child. So as long as those qualifications were in place, as long as they don't leave the country or as long as, you know, they stay away from trouble and don't get into kind of any criminal history, they should be okay as far as immigration not coming knocking on their door or, you know, having them report to an office or things like that.
So this would go the same across the board for people here in the country and specifically here in the Valley that don't have that paperwork, that are illegal. They won't be facing deportation depending, like you said, their record.
Correct. And unfortunately, there is a lot of people here in this area that are going to be affected by the decision. Unfortunately, it's not something that they wanted to hear, but I mean, those are the rules and laws of our country. So, just to reinforce the fact, they are not going to be enforcement priorities if they do not have a criminal record, if they are not recent border crossers, or, you know, they don't have any ties to any kind of terrorism group and things like that. Unfortunately, they won't be able to come out of the shadows and get their work permits and get their Social Security cards, but they still won't have that fear of saying, well, at any moment someone can come and, you know, take me away from my family.
And Rick, it's an election year, but what...
All right, so anyway, we'll take a little segue here and come back, but got some thoughts on this. 633-523-1450, I know you do as well. Call in to AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell. You're listening to KOBE, and it's 633, and it's the 15th of December. Wow. We'll be right back, friends.
Maybe I...
Little local news.
Quite as good as I should have. Thank you.
right, so we've got this local thing, and maybe it's no big deal, but I think it is just kind of symbolizes the fact that we're living in the past here. You cannot be, I mean, it's like living at, it's like a kid living at home, a teenager, in total defiance of the parents. At some point, the parent is going to show the kid the door and say, see you later. And, you know, you can start supporting yourself. So we are the number one state in terms of federal dollars and in, by some measures. And so we're going to stand up here in Doniana County and have a sanctuary city. And so what is going to happen? Who's going to blink first when the government starts cutting off money here? Now, bear in mind, people are already complaining about budget cuts because of the drop in oil prices and the massive loss of revenue, which once again brings to mind the fact that if you have a state that doesn't have a robust and broad economy, you cannot expect to have a good standard of living or a high quality of life. It just, you know, it's just unavoidable facts. So what are we doing? What is the leadership in this community and in this state doing to develop a broader economy? I mean, we got everything you need in this state. You know? So let me get you some headlines here. More electors are threatening to not back Trump. They are also being harassed and threatened. And this is this backdoor attempt to, and that actually what I'm going to get to, because when Ben comes in, Ben Rossin will be coming in today. We'll go back to the sanctuary city thing, but long shot bid to block Trump arriving at Electoral College on Monday. And the Electoral College is who elects the president. The Electoral College, 538 members gathered, is gathering Monday in 50 state capitals to cast ballots that matter the most when it comes to electing a U.S. president. And this is from Bloomberg News. There's drama this year because a group calling itself the Hamilton Electors, led by two Democrat electors from Western states, are trying to get the Electoral College to throw out the name of Barack Obama and get, say, I think it's 40. They need 40 votes to change hands. So he's now here's Brent Chiafalo, Electoral College member from Washington State, who is the organizer, calls the institution the nation's emergency break. And if only, he says, if only 37 Republican electors change their vote, Donald Trump will not have the 270 electoral votes needed to be president. 37 patriots can save this country. All right. In doing that, aren't these people claiming to be more important than the American voter? Hundreds of millions of people voted. And isn't that, I mean, that's, isn't this tyranny in and of itself, Electoral College tyranny? All right, I've got a little clip from this Chuffalo character. And these people, and this guy is a leftist, of course, because leftists don't believe in rules. They don't believe in law. When things go their way, they stick with the law. When they don't, they want to break the law. Here's Brent Chuffalo, Washington State Elector, head of the so-called Hamilton Electors, which is another hoax. It doesn't even come out of the Constitution. It comes out of the Federalist Papers.
Hi, my name is Brent Chuffalo, and I'm a member of the Electoral College. There are 538 of us. Since there's been some confusion about us, I want to explain a few things. Our founding fathers spent years thinking about how our system of government should work, and they wrote a constitution that has guided our country for over 200 years. Like all smart architects or engineers, they also designed a fail-safe mechanism, an emergency brake in case something went wrong. This emergency brake is the Electoral College. You may think that the Electoral College is supposed to rubber stamp the winner of the election. That is not the case. In fact, that is the opposite of what the founders intended. They intended for us to subject the winner of the election to exhaustive scrutiny. And if the candidate does not meet our standards, we are expected to elect an alternative. They were worried about the kind of demagogue who had taken control of so many other countries. So the Electoral College was charged with making sure that the president met three important criteria. First, they wanted to make sure that the voters elected a qualified person. Second, they wanted to prevent the election of a charismatic autocrat. Third, the founding fathers feared that a president could be elected who was under the influence of foreign powers. The founders believed that even if the people failed to realize that their president-elect had the discerning members of the Electoral College, the Electoral College is our fail-safe mechanism. And no, we've never used it before, but our country has never needed it before. We have always elected experienced statesmen, but this time is different. This is the moment Hamilton and Madison warned us about. This is the emergency they built the Electoral College for, and it is our constitutional duty and our moral responsibility to put the emergency measures into action.
Actually, the Electoral College is meant to better represent the United States as it lays out. It's not some sort of a crazy. I mean, this guy thinks that he's more important than the 106 million or whatever it is people that voted for Trump. Once again, another deluded leftist. When the rules work, embrace them. When they don't, throw them out. 644 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. And I'm going to get into we're going to come back and get into what's bubbling underneath the causing the foment and the sense that supposedly Russia is invalidating our contest. 644, and we'll be back for the Russian hack theory. Be right back.
If I made you feel second best, girl, I'm sorry I was blind. But you were always on my mind.
Okay, so you've got the Hamilton electors and supposedly the Electoral College is a fail-safe mechanism to keep United States from having a nutcase appointed as the head of it to elect it. So I guess that means that all the other leftists who want to throw the Electoral College out the window are wrong and they're totally mistaken, and the Hillary Clintons and all the Al Gores and all these other people. They must be mistaken, right? So, what is if Trump appears to be operating in a very judicious and careful manner? So I think they've lost a lot of the momentum behind the idea that he's totally crazy and has to be removed. Now they had to come up with something else. So supposedly the Russians hacked America and overturned the election. Now let me ask you this. If that's true, why is there absolutely zero presentation of any evidence or any explanation for how that actually worked? For example, Hillary doesn't get elected unless she gets Wisconsin. Wisconsin's voting machines are not online. So how did the Russians hack those? Even if the Russians came in and tried to influence something, you would still need them to knock off Wisconsin, wouldn't you? All right, so here is whether the Russian hacking claims will impact the electors' decision. 40 electors, led by Nancy Pelosi's daughter, are demanding an explanation. This is crazy. The left is walking dead. The walking dead. Once these people get knocked off, they come back for the grave for revenge. Check it out.
China or somebody. It could be somebody sitting in a bed someplace. Democrats are putting it out because they suffered one of the greatest defeats in the history of politics in this country. Personally, it could be Russia.
He called on Russia to hack Secretary Clinton. So he certainly had a pretty good sense of whose side this activity was coming down on?
I think we ought to approach all of these issues on the assumption that the Russians do not wish us well.
A reaction to the intelligence reports suggesting that Russia not only interfered in the election, or tried to, but also wanted Donald Trump to win. Donald Trump tweeting out this weekend, "Can you imagine if the election results were the opposite and we tried to play the Russia CIA card? It would be called conspiracy theory." Continuing, "Unless you catch hackers in the act, it is very hard to determine who was doing the hacking and why. Wasn't this brought up before the election?" Speaking of the election, the Clinton team now saying they want the electors to learn about all the intelligence involved here. John Podesta saying electors have a solemn responsibility under the Constitution, and we support their efforts to have their questions addressed. This is not a partisan issue, and we're glad to see bipartisan support in Congress for an investigation into Russia's role. We believe that the administration owes it to the American people to explain what it knows regarding the extent and manner of Russia's interference. And this has to be, or this be done as soon as possible. John Podesta with the Clinton folks. With that, let's bring in our panel. Matthew Cottineni, editor-in-chief of the Washington Free Beacon. Mercedes Schlapp, columnist for the Washington Times. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today. And syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer. Okay, Susan, the importance of the Podesta comment is that the electors meet on December 19th. And they choose how many go to Donald Trump and how many go to Hillary Clinton?
I think there is no actual prospect that this is going to affect what electors do. But it is a sign of how much Democrats and some Republicans think there ought to be some investigation into Russia's attempt at meddling in this election. The fact is, the intelligence agencies are in agreement that there was a Russia effort to meddle in the election. The thing that we don't know that there's a consensus about is whether that was aimed at really electing Donald Trump. But the idea that this is going to somehow affect the outcome of this election, I don't think anybody realistically thinks that's true.
But do you think some in reporting this and some talking about it are shorthanding it and saying it could?
I don't think anybody credible is saying that.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like maybe John Podesta is trying to have a little fun, because clearly this gets under Donald Trump's skin. We see him reacting very much to the idea that his election wasn't legitimate, which I think goes farther than the actual criticism is going.
I don't think John Podesta is trying to have a little fun. I think that there is this sense, this narrative that the Democrats are trying to push to try to delegitimize the election results. There was a former Hillary campaign advisor on television this morning saying just that. Russia is delegitimizing this election. Americans should be up in arms. So I really think that there is a movement towards the fact, this last-ditch effort to just put that question out there to the electors to say, wait a second here, can he, Donald Trump, really take this oath of office with the Russian hackers? And they're trying to just make that call out to the electors. I don't think it's going to change the outcome, but I do think that they're trying to make this pitch, and they're basing it off the fact that lawmakers back in September, they were criticizing the Obama administration for not taking action on looking into the Russian hacking.
Matt, you had Reince Priebus, the White House Chief of Staff, incoming, say this when asked about all of this back and forth this weekend.
The Russians didn't tell Hillary Clinton to ignore Wisconsin and Michigan, okay? I mean, I know this is this insane analysis. She lost the election because her ideas were bad. She didn't fit the electorate. She ignored states that she shouldn't have, and Donald Trump was the change agent, okay?
All right, so that is there. Now, we'll come back and do a little more analysis on this Russian hacking story, but it just seems so pathetic. I mean, who was the one that got up and gave this, you know, demanded that Donald accept the results? And how many national journalists were appalled when Donald Trump said, well, we'll see what happens. Now Hillary and her group are still trying to claw back from the grave. I mean, it's sad. 6:54, we'll take one more break.
You were always on.
All right, so the claim that the Russians have hacked into the United States system and have overturned the election, or that they could have, as far as I can tell, the CIA, and I don't even know what their claims are, that they got inside, but I mean, is the CIA claiming that the Russians overturned the election, or are they just stating that that they got into the system? In the meanwhile, there's no consensus in the top levels. The number one agency for evaluating these issues has not stated that this has occurred. So it seems like a non-issue, but it is a big issue to the so-called Hamilton electors. In other words, the Nancy Pelosi daughter, the other far lefties who want to use any opportunity they can to overthrow the results of a lawful election. It's I don't know. I find it appalling. 659 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces AM 1450 on KOBE. 523 1450 and Ben Rossin will be on in just a minute with his Rossin report.
Maybe I didn't hold you all those lonely, lonely times. I guess I never told you I'm so happy that you're mine. Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. But you were always on my mind. You were...
Well, good morning, 7:06, and we got Ben Rossin here for the Rossin Report, and good to see you, Ben. Good morning.
Good morning, Kelly. It's good to be here this morning.
Thanks. How are things?
They're going well. Kelly, as most of the listeners know, the County Commission passed the Unified Development Code on Tuesday of last week. That was an unfortunate thing. It passed in a very close vote of 3-2. But unfortunately, that's now the law of the land, and
oops, I'm sorry about that, folks. A little glitch there. All right, so Ben is here, and so Ben, you're saying that the county passed this this new law, and it was a very tight vote. I know that you had another person oppose it. Wow. So we got this new law in, and it looks dreadful.
You know, Kelly, the Unified Development Code, which was passed on Tuesday by a 3-2 vote, it's as close as you can get on the county commission. There are a lot of problems with the code, and unfortunately, it's now the law of the land. So we'll need to work on fixing those problems come January.
Yeah. So can it be repealed?
It can, Kelly. So the Unified Development Code replaces 9 documents that the county had. 7 of those are ordinances. So if the new commission decided, if the new commission decided we could repeal the UDC and replace 7 of those ordinances, the other 2 are not quite as easy because they are the ETZ, or the 5-mile area around the county, and that would have to be renegotiated with the city. So that could not be just simply repealed what the commission did.
So what can't be repealed?
The ETZ. So we had a ETZ zone, which is a 5-mile zone around the city of Las Cruces, that development and land use was regulated by a 5-member board, which was made up of 3 county commissioners and 2 city councilors. With the adoption of the Unified Development Code, that goes away. That goes away. And that's not as simple to just put back in place, because it would have to be renegotiated with the city.
Okay, and what is that, the part that's not non-negotiable that can't be repealed, what does that cover? I mean, what exactly does, what was the, or the impact?
So that's the land use and the zoning that's right around the city limits, the process for getting building permits for subdividing your land, those types of things are included in that. So those now all fall under the new Unified Development Code.
All right. So, I mean, can't do anything about it.
We'll see what the new commission wants to do in January. We can certainly make changes to it. I look forward to hearing from my constituents and residents on how it impacts them and what things need to be corrected. And I'm sure this is an issue that will be brought up come January.
All right. So, and let's take a real brief break here and we'll be right back. 709 Kelly O'Connell, Ben Rawson here.
But I would not have found you, angel flying too close to the ground.
All right, so we have Ben Rawson here, and we're talking about what's going on at the county. And then Ben, and it is 7:13. Today is the 15th of December. What part of the recent legislation that the county did would you like to roll back?
Well, you know, Kelly, there's a lot of it, and if I had my way, I'd probably roll back the whole thing. You know, there's serious problems in it, and there's silly problems in it, Kelly. in the silly category, for all those residents of the county, don't go out and shape your trees. That's now illegal in Doñana County, so don't go shaping any trees. You know, I think that's kind of silly. That's certainly government overreach. I don't know that that's a real serious problem with the document, but it's a silly problem. On the more serious side, dealing with animals is a big one. We amended on Tuesday to change the animal regulations to only apply to residential areas. However, that's over 90% of the county is classified as residential because all of the agricultural land is categorized in T2, and that's included in the residential classification. So it really does not apply to only residences, as people would think of it, but it also applies to the farming and to the ag area out in Doñana County. And I think there's some big problems with that. You know, we go from there, Kelly, into the some of the zoning maps that are out there. The zoning maps have problems, and county staff even acknowledged that and talked about some of the fixes they'd done as recently as 6 days before we voted on it. And there's more changes to come. And so those are some of the problems in the document, Kelly.
All right, so do you feel like the will of the people has been defied in this latest work by the commission?
Absolutely, I do, Kelly. I'd remind voters that two of the county commissioners that voted in favor of it, Commissioner Hancock and Commissioner Garcia, were both fired by the Democratic voters in the primary election. And they were told by the Democrat voters, we don't want you to represent us anymore. And yet this was still pushed through before, in their very last meeting. It was the very last meeting that those two will attend as commissioners.
Yeah, it's sad, you know, and the fact that Wayne Hancock was leading, and, you know, usually people in leadership positions get retained no matter what, and the fact that he was thrown out, it is kind of sad. And once again, so let's...
And Kelly, thrown out by his own party. It wasn't even that the other party threw him out. His own party did not want him to represent them.
Let's switch gears for a second.
Absolutely.
Because I think there's a connection between the decisions that they made and the school district, the school board in which they want DAPA and DACA. And it is, once again, I think, an example of far leftism that could harm our community quite a bit.
Kelly, it sure could. You talked earlier about the school board decision to try to put together a coalition to come up with language to make the county, city, and all the school boards all sanctuary areas. And Kelly, it just, that doesn't make any sense to me. We have laws on the ground, on the books, and we shouldn't be picking and choosing which laws we're going to enforce.
Not only that, but this is an issue that, you know, everybody in the United States agrees that we need immigration reform. We need, for a couple of reasons, that the laws don't seem to fit what people want. Whether it be the immigrants or the employers or the legislators, the law is not fitting what's going on in America on the one hand. And on the other hand, there's all of these people that are living in here that are illegal, and it gives the sense to people around the world that as long as you can make it to the border, you're an American citizen.
Kelly, you're absolutely right. I was reading an article by Heath Hauserman, and he is quoting one individual who said, we're treated as second-class citizens. And I kind of laughed to myself. I'm like, if you're not a citizen, you shouldn't be treated as any sort of citizen. You're in our country illegally, and you need to go through the proper process to become a citizen.
But these, you know, and it coming from another country, where would they get the ideas that they have rights that are as fundamental as any citizen's? Where do they get those ideas? They get them from the left. And
sure,
the left is trying to aggrandize power. They're trying to build their power base by misinforming people and by misusing and ignoring the laws. And ultimately, we're all going to pay for it.
We are all going to pay for it. Yeah, we do. We need the immigration reform, but it needs to be actual debated policy, not people deciding just to refuse to follow the law.
So having said that, Your impression of what is the school board trying to do? They're not even legislators.
they're not even legislators. They are I suppose they're the legislative body for the school board. So maybe a little bit in that sense, but they're certainly trying to push this issue even farther. The mayor has already said that the city of Las Cruces is not a sanctuary city.
We have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Ralph Kelly.
Morning, Ralph. How you doing? And hope you're well. And what's going on?
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Rawson. What he thinks about this need for illegals, that there's an absolute need here in the United States for them. And I have a couple of follow-ups on that, please.
Ben?
Well, Ralph, the need to have them here. You know, I don't know that we do, Kelly. Or I'm sorry, Ralph. Ralph, if we did not have some of the illegals in certain employment opportunities, then the wages would be going up automatically. That's one of the things that's keeping the wages down. And quite frankly, I think that's one of the things that's leading to some of the minimum wage debates that then the left is also pushing. So I do not see them as a necessary part of our economy. I would like to think that if we went back to following the law, that many of those would go through the correct process and would become citizens. But they need to go through the process and not just be here illegally.
That's exactly the way I feel. During World War II, the POWs, German and Italians, harvested the crops. During the winter cotton time, picking time, there weren't enough, so they closed the public schools here in Las Cruces so the students could go pick cotton. In my years up until I graduated from high school, I didn't see one illegal, especially during World War II. You wouldn't see one here, even though the need was great. There weren't enough people to work here to do this work. Now, I'm going to jump all the way across to the northern part of the United States in Montana, where I worked approximately 3 years right at the Canadian border, Kalispell, Columbia Falls, Whitefish, Polson, and all that. In the 3 years I was over there, I didn't see one black, not one Hispanic, unless I looked in the mirror, and they did all the work up there, and that's logging country. Yet there were no illegals up there. In three years, mind you, I didn't see one. Now, how can anybody justify the fact or what they say that we have to have them here because the Americans will not do the work they do?
Right.
That doesn't hold water at all.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, Ralph, I think part of that problem is we have a society that has begun to discourage work. And so we need to get back to where we're encouraging people to work at their maximum ability and provide some economic output for the county, the state, and the country.
Also, one more item. The Hispanic vote for Trump, though they won't come out and say it, a large, very large amount of hechos or made American citizens from Mexico, mostly that I know, wouldn't vote for Hillary. They voted for Trump, but of course he didn't want to come out and say because they have spent 6 to 13 years becoming an American citizen, getting good jobs. Now these illegals are coming over here and taking these jobs. It's so hard. And for half price, cash. And they're doing that, and these people that are legal here are very upset about that. And you won't hear it out in the public because, of course, you know, you'd have a whole bunch of people against you. That is a fact. And a lot of the Hispanic people voted for Trump. I know it because I've talked to so many people like you cannot imagine.
Well, Ralph, I'm glad to hear that, and I sure hope that you'll stay attentive to this issue. And as it comes before the county commission, that you'll show up there and help make your voice be heard.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ralph. All right, so this idea that we're going to build a separate country inside of America and have our own rules, what do you think about that?
Boy, Kelly, you know, I think it's a very dangerous slide to get on there. And, you know, I've made the connection before, and I know some people would disagree with me, but we also have a law on marijuana, and I think that anytime you've got a law in the books, if we want to change the law, let's change the law. If we want to just defy the law, then I think we have a problem with that. And when we have law enforcement who's told to pick and choose what laws to enforce, it puts them in a very difficult situation to be successful.
Yes. Now, we'll take a little break here and be right back. And got Ben Ross and the Rossin Report, 523-1450 for questions or comments. You're listening to KOBE AM Las Cruces 720. Oh, Speak of the devil, we have another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Kelly. This is Chris.
Chris, good morning. Hope you're well. And what's going on?
I just wanted to backtrack on Mr. Austin, what he had said, something about like subdivisions. Can you elaborate more on what it was that they had passed? Or
I'd be glad to. It may be something that let me give you my cell phone number, and anyone else that's listening too, you can call me on it if you've got any questions. It's 644-4055. But the document that was passed was over 500 pages. And a lot of that deals with how lot splits and subdivisions or subdividing your land are going to take place. And so there's some very big impacts in there. If you're considering doing something and you like the current ordinances, you've got about 30 days to get it done.
Okay. And that's here for Doñana?
Correct. Now, it only applies to the Doñana County area, so it does not apply to the city of Las Cruces. It was kind of ironic during public input. I think we had 8 individuals that stepped up to say how great this was going to be for the city, and I had to chuckle inside because it doesn't apply to the city, but apparently they had been given some bad information.
Okay. So your number is
644-4055. And if you have a specific question, I'd be glad to answer it now, or you can give me a call later as well.
Okay. No, I'll have to find out what more we need to do, but thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thanks
for listening.
All right, folks. AM Las Cruces 523-1450. You're listening to KOBE. And you're taking off, Ben?
Kelly, I'm going to take off. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for sponsoring the show.
Absolutely.
Folks, we'll be right back.
And I patched up your broken wing. And hung around a while. Trying to keep your spirits up. And your fever down.
All right, so we're talking to Ben there and dealing with basically the impact of far leftism and even local government is difficult. And if you hear that the United States is, or pardon me, that Las Cruces is on a list of cities that is considered to be amongst the hardest to build things and to open businesses. And let me ask you this. Let's just assume for the sake of the argument that that's true. I've heard it from a number of people. And so what have we gained by being a difficult place to open businesses? How has it benefited us? What do we get out of that? And should a small group of people with very strong opinions, why would these people think that only their opinion matters? And, you know, so I'm asking you this for recently, I believe that I ask you the question, what's the difference between someone who is a far leftist advocate, politically active, maybe they're politically correct, or maybe they're deeply embedded into the political process in terms of advocacy and changing the law. People that are in, that get in your face, individuals who judge you and try to defame you if you don't agree with them. What's the difference between that person and a radical Christian? I mean, or any other religious, you know, sect. We have decided, I think, in the last few decades in America in general, that, I mean, not me personally, but and maybe not you, but there's been a broad consensus that being overly religious is a bad thing. So we get rid of that. and we've become more pluralistic in this country. I mean, the gay marriage ruling by the Supreme Court is a prime example. We've become pluralistic. Pluralism, the mixture of different parts creating a plurality, e pluribus unum, out of many come one. And we've taken it to the nth degree to where now we arrogate to ourselves the right to tell other people what they have to believe in through the court system, what they have to support. What's the difference between that and somebody who's your neighbor and comes over knocking, trying to convert you all the time, or the Savonarola was this priest who came as a reformer in Italy, Venice, I believe, and he brought up a lot of important changes that the city needed to make, and they acted upon these. He became very powerful, and ultimately he was overthrown, I believe, by the Medici. But we don't like it. We have a visceral distaste for religious advocacy that goes too far. Why is political advocacy any different? And for the sake of the argument, these people that fixate on it, that is their religion. It's a religious argument that they're making because they're talking to the ultimate ends, the ultimate purpose of life, right and wrong, and even having control over what other people do. For example, the people in this government right now don't think there should be freedom of choice in healthcare. The government has to mandate what you're going to do in your healthcare. So to me, that's no different than the government getting up and saying, you know, women have to wear burkas, or you can't eat pork or drink alcohol. To me, it's all this like tyranny, you know? And why is religious tyranny wrong, but political tyranny is acceptable? I don't get it. Anyway, I'm going to come back and, let me play for you right now a little bit from Venezuela. When you take these ideas, socialism, Marxism, and you treat them as the ultimate truth, that there is, you know, the only reality is this right here, and if you don't follow this, then the government's going to punish you, you end up with a failed state. I've been talking about Venezuela. If we followed the leadership of the city and county far enough, we would turn into Venezuela. And we're already halfway there in terms of not having a functional or burgeoning or robustly growing economy, right? Here's from AP News, AFP News. And this is from 2 days ago. Venezuela's Maduro removes 100-unit banknotes from circulation. And what you've got...
Depositando los billetes de 100.
I'm depositing the 100 Boulevard bills now because they won't be able to get rid of them. So people are trading in... Can't really play this because it's not it's translated on the screen. Why things in Venezuela keep getting worse from Bloomberg News. I'm only playing these. I'm only pointing out Venezuela because it is the same set of theories that is driving the advocacy, the decision making, say on the county commission, even though that people voted and decided they didn't want those people there anymore. They stayed in place and made decisions that are going to harm the future prospects of this community. And they think that they're secular messiahs.
As soon as I left the hospital.
Hold on just a second here. I have to burn off a little ad here. All right, here's Bloomberg.
Venezuela does not have enough food to feed its 30 million residents. It also can't guarantee them electricity or medical supplies in its hospitals. It's a country staring down social upheaval, political unrest, and bordering on economic collapse. Multiple states of emergency have been declared. So how did this happen to the country with the largest oil reserves in the world? For years, subsidized oil bought Venezuela's government influence abroad and popular support at home. But collapsing oil revenue combined with a series of government missteps have many fingers pointing squarely at the unpopular president, Nicolas Maduro. There have been a number of calls for a referendum on him. Polls suggest that if electoral officials allowed such a vote, he'd lose by a wide margin. Here's the situation. Venezuela's current crisis started long before Maduro with his predecessor, the late President Hugo Chavez. Chavez revolutionized Venezuelan politics with a left-wing ideology called Chavismo and fiery anti-U.S. rhetoric, saying of George W. Bush,
"Yesterday, the devil came here, and it smells of sulfur still today."
While in power, Chavez nationalized thousands of Venezuelan companies he said were not functioning in the public interest and focused all of the country's resources on one thing, producing oil. This meant that almost everything Venezuela consumed besides oil needed to be imported, and Chavez borrowed a lot of foreign money to fund it all. While oil prices were high, it worked. Then, in 2013, the first domino fell. Chavez died. Maduro took over for Chavez, and in 2014, the second domino fell. The price of oil started to crumble. Revenue from oil accounts for 95% of Venezuela's export earnings, and when prices for the commodity began plummeting, Venezuela found itself suddenly short on cash. The government responded by slashing imports like basic groceries and medical supplies to avoid defaulting on its foreign debt. It also started printing money, causing inflation, which has surged into the triple digits without an end in sight. The economic freefall has exacerbated social problems. The country's murder rate is surpassed only by Honduras. Citizens wait for hours to get simple household goods, and Venezuela's misery index is the highest in the world. It's gotten so bad that food shortages have prompted major riots, and President Maduro is bearing the brunt of the blame. Demonstrations have been held across the country calling for Maduro's ouster. Maduro says it's nothing more than a coup attempt. Now here's the argument. Maduro's critics say that he has botched his presidency so badly he should resign immediately. However, some say the alternative isn't much better. The opposition alliance is pushing for new elections, but it's still made up of more than a dozen parties with no unified plan to fix the economy and no single leader to do it. With oil prices unlikely to head back to previous highs, neither Maduro nor the opposition has a roadmap to fix the crisis.
Pretty sad. We'll be back in just a second, but I mean, you know, these people are living as slaves in this country because they don't have the freedom, the most basic freedoms. 741 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, and we'll be back to talk a little bit more about Venezuela.
I knew someday.
All right. So, I mean, let me just point something out. I've, you know, interacted with Billy Garrett before he was on the show a long time ago. I really, when he came on, I really didn't even know what he believed. But, and he seems like a nice guy. But this is, you know, let me tell you something. Anybody that I criticize on the show, it's nothing personal. It is just trying to, you know, look at what's going on, and there's a cause and effect. There is a reason that Mexico is the way that it is, and the United States is the way it is. And when I lived in Ireland, I, you know, there was a difference between the north of Ireland and the south of Ireland that was, you know, kind of roughly similar to what the difference between here and Mexico, only it, you know, it wasn't dangerous down in Ireland. But there is an impact of your beliefs and your policies, and a small change in policy, or what appears to be a small change in policy, can make a massive impact. And so, you know, I just think that to put the people of Doñana first, we've got to try to put in as good as policy as possible. So you see what Trump is doing. You see the dollar is at a 13-year high right now. The stock market is 20,000 plus. You see that, you know, not only are jobs being saved, but their businesses are now rehiring. And I believe, was it IBM that's going to hire 25,000 workers? The basic rules of the regime, the tax rate, tariffs, and all kinds of other tax policies and regulations, red tape and everything. As soon as Obama starts to leave, the economy springs to life. Now, you can say that Obama did it, but does anybody really believe that? I mean, it's Trump bringing in changes. The promise for change is causing these businesses to reach under their mattress and pull cash out and say, we're going to invest. And the tragedy is that Barack Obama spent 8 years trying to persuade people that life can't get any better. We can't drill our way out. We have to accept a reduced place in the world system. And why would you go out of your way to talk down? I was saying before, it was like being a maitre d' at a hospice. It's terrible, a terrible approach. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
Good morning, Donna. Hope you're well. And what's going on?
Well, I'd just like to make a comment on what happened Tuesday at the county commission meeting, if I may, against the UDC. And it was interesting to me that Commissioner Garcia expressed that he was conflicted about whether or not to vote for or against it. And toward the end, he said, well, I've observed 23 people are voting. The public, 23 people from the public came and spoke for the UDC today. 9 people came and spoke against it. So he was under the impression that most people in this county were for it. But I went to several of the Planning and Zoning Commission meetings, and where no one spoke for it. Everyone, the 20 or 30 people that got up and spoke against it, and pointed out problems with the UDC to the Planning and Zoning Commission. No one spoke for it, and I got up and I said that. So we as citizens need to be involved with our local county and city governments. We need to know what's going on. We need to make our voices heard.
Absolutely, and we need to hold these people out if they lie to us. And it's, you know, I mean, I am just kind of shocked by how repetitive history is, how many bad leaders come in and make life worse for people. It's tragic.
That's right. And we need to get out there and get rid of them.
And stand up to it. Thanks for the call, Donna.
You're welcome.
All right,
bye-bye.
All right. Yeah. I mean, you know, all right. So here's the thing. There's a book out there and it's Reagan and JFK, something like that. Look it up on Google. It is that the claim of the book is that JFK understood how to grow the economy. And apparently this is before the Democrats were in love with stagnation or whatever, that, you know, this love affair with a lack of growth that makes the government stronger. He was growing the economy, he got assassinated, and then it took up till Reagan to re-implement some of his policies, and now Trump is going to re-implement them. And I really don't understand it. The same bad policies are getting implemented in the county commission. The school board is sticking its nose in stuff and quixotic. I will give you that definition again. Foolishly impractical, especially in the pursuit of ideals, especially marked by rash, lofty, romantic ideas or extravagantly chivalrous actions. And so instead of minding our P's and Q's, we're making a lot of stupid decisions, and we're doing it here locally too, and it's just so frustrating. We can have an economy in which the children of our families go to NMSU, graduate, and stay here and have a job because the economy is growing. I mean, this idea that the leadership of the city would stand up and say we're a no-growth area is absolutely tragic, you know? You have another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Jesse Kelly.
Hey, Jesse. Good morning. Hope you're well and know what's on your mind.
Well, you know, this whole thing about growing the economy and everything else, you know?
Yeah.
Over the years of my life, I've determined that what happens is that, you know, liberals or liberal Democrats, I want to put those two together. All they know is how to spin. They don't know how to make money. They don't know how to make businesses. They don't know how to go out there and generate jobs for people. All they know is how to spend it, how to go out there and, you know, come up with a regulation or come up with a program to give it all away left and right. But they don't know how to go out there and generate wealth.
Yes.
And that's the biggest problem we have, is when you put those people in charge, all they know how to do is to spend it. So that's all they do is generate, you know, regulations and laws to spend it, to get rid of it, to do income re-equalization. But they don't concentrate on the other stuff, which how to make it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, you know, thanks for the call, folks. So a great point by Jesse. Here's my analogy. Would you ever, in your wildest and sickest fantasies, define health as how many parasites you have on your body, how many leeches? You know what I'm saying? Only in leftism do you get this idea that prosperity comes out of taxes. Taxes are a necessary evil, but you cannot tax your way to prosperity in the same way that you can't add parasites to your body and expect to have more health. We'll take one last break here. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23-1450. We'll be back.
For love's the greatest healer to be found.
Well, show's almost over, but Cafe Go-Go, new appetizers, hog wings, loaded wedge fries. I've test-driven some of these. House wings, Hatch chili green chili cheese fries topped with bacon and scallions. Yummy. And Cafe Go-Go, right across from the Sam's Club, right across from your Starbucks. So go support them. Great food, and the menu is always changing. All right, so here is Venezuela closes Colombian border to stop currency mafia. There's one story. Maduro orders withdrawal of Venezuela's largest banknotes.
Venezuela is withdrawing its largest banknotes from circulation. The president says it's to prevent counterfeit notes from being smuggled across the Colombian border. The 100 Bolivar note is the most common in Venezuela and is worth 2 US cents on the black market. Annual inflation in the country is estimated at more than 500%. President Maduro has blamed organized crime networks at the Colombian border for buying up Venezuelan notes in order to buy subsidized Venezuelan goods and sell them for large profits in Colombia. Critics, including the main opposition leader, have condemned the move as economically nonsensical. But the president is undeterred. He told a news conference he'd given orders to senior generals. I've told them to close immediately all possible routes of entry into the country by land, air and sea so that these banknotes don't return, he said. The Colombians can take them and keep their scam abroad.
Wow.
The audience of government officials warmly greeted his long speech. Venezuelans have 10 days from Wednesday to exchange the 100 Bolivar bills at the central bank. But critics say border smuggling is not to blame for the country's nationwide shortages and economic crisis.
They don't have leisurely meals. They have leisurely speeches in communist countries and no food. Here's an idea. How did China become the world's greatest producer of stuff? Believe it or not, the president of China was in Singapore and was amazed at how prosperous they were. And he talked to the leaders there and he took the model from Singapore and applied it to China. That is a fact. You can go look it up. Thanks for tuning in. Well, so Venezuela should contact Hong Kong and Singapore and any other place that would help him and say, please help us. We don't know how to make stuff. We don't know how to have a prosperous country. I'm sure they would give him direction. Thanks for tuning in, Kelly O'Connell, 7:59, and take you out with some Willie Nelson on AM Las Cruces, KOBE. Ciao.
Leave me if you need to. I will still remember. Angel flying too close.